Okay, friends, we continue now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 150B. We're on page 638. We're in the appendix of the book, and we're dealing with secret doctrine references that have been collected at the end of the astrology book. All the great astrologers have admitted that man could react against the stars. A type of fatalism is sometimes present in the misinterpretation or partial interpretation of astrology, but here we have something interesting said, that in casting the horoscope of the planet, which will someday be possible, it will be found that the line of these forces and of our planetary response to them is of more potent effect than is the zodiacal constellations upon the human unit. This is due to the immeasurably advanced point in evolution of the planetary spirits, immeasurable when it comes to human advancement, who have in their individual lives largely transcended the influence of the 12 constellations and are becoming rapidly responsive to the higher vibrations of their great prototypes, the three intimate constellations, as they have esoterically been called. And now this is the point here. This is the correspondence in the lives of these great entities to the manner in which an advanced individual can offset the influence of the planets and thus so dominate his personality life that prediction and certainty as to the activity and circumstance are no longer possible. The soul is dominating, the planets cease to condition the life, and so it is with the constellations and the planetary logoi. They can offset the lower influences as they awaken to and correspond to the infinitely higher vibrations of the three major constellations. Well, that is a definite statement about the power of such constellations as the Great Bear, Pleiades, Sirius, in relation to the 12 constellations of the zodiac. But there is something that has to be looked into here, because these three great constellations, or intimate constellations, are finding themselves in relationship to zodiacal constellations, which are an aspect of the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. So as I brought up here, which really is superior? The Great Bear rules seven head centers in the in that great supercosmic logos, and then there is the highest of all the head centers in a way, the heart in the head. So maybe the entire zodiac is of greater power than some of these other constellations, including the Great Bear. And here it says infinitely higher vibrations of the three major constellations. To me, there is a problem of proportion which I do not fully understand and have been struggling to understand. Some of these great constellations in the zodiac really have some tremendous solar logoi within them. And that's why we have to wonder how it can be said that the three intimate constellations have vibration infinitely greater, infinitely higher than the zodiacal constellations. And further, if there can be in the human being a petal in this heart in the head center, that would seem to me to be of greater power than, let us say, a solar plexus center or a sacral center in the human being, or at least of potentially dominating authority. Now, when you stop to think in the one about whom naught may be said, the chakras themselves are constellations. There are stars which are as centers within those chakras, and then there are planets which are as centers within those solar logoi. So we have the planet at 2 times removed from the solar plexus center, which is already dominated by an aspect of the heart in the head center of the one about whom not may be said. So I think maybe you see where the issue is when determining the relative proportion of their power. But anyway, we just have to accept it for the moment and think that, you know, we have to increase our interpretive power to understand what is really given. So in any case, the man can offset the stars. This is the word that we're using, and there's another place where he talks about the need to, is it counteract? I have to see. Counteract the effects of the astrological influences. Here we're offsetting the pairs of opposites and ray energies, and which can be offset by soul energies rightly employed. So even here, there are antagonisms which seem inevitable and which can be accounted for by the ray energies, but they can be again offset. Let's just see if the word counteract is here. No, it's not. But there is a place here in the astrology book where it tells us that we have to, in a way, rebalance our horoscope and make up for, what is the word, like inadequacies, insufficiencies, something of that nature. See if I can find that. Inadequacies? No. Insufficiencies? I doubt it. No. It's not here either. I think for the moment I'll just have to say that the quotation that I offered is sufficient. I think there's another one, but the idea is that if we are truly an advanced human being, we can work with the influences of the planets, of the zodiacal signs. We can work with any influence, and we can see to the balancing of certain tendencies or the counterbalancing of certain tendencies according to our understanding, our observation, and our will. We can, in fact, work against what appear to be irresistible tendencies, at least for the unthinking person who reacts strictly impulsively and according to the type of energy which enters his energy system. We do not have to react in that same way. So, if we knew nothing about astrology and we had a certain trait in our character, we could substitute something for it. And that, of course, is another word that is possible, a substitute. It's possible here. Well, no, maybe not. It's not coming in exactly as I had hoped. But anyway, we have enough. We have enough to know that it is possible for us to offset certain personality tendencies, even if we don't know anything about astrology. Then we begin to study astrology. We have succeeded in offsetting those tendencies, and we learn that the tendencies are correlated with certain planets and positions that we and aspects we have in our stars. So certainly, if we offset them before we knew what was their cause, we can certainly offset them once we know what the cause is. This system, or cycles, cannot be comprehended if the spiritual action of these periods, preordained, so to say, by karmic law, is separated from their physical course. I suppose we're talking about cycles which can be measured in some physical sense, as in the rotations and revolutions and proper, of various heavenly bodies, and the proper motion of stars and so forth. The calculations of the best astrologers would fail, or at any rate remain imperfect, unless this dual action is thoroughly taken into consideration and mastered upon these lines. But the mastery can be achieved only through initiation. So let us say there are certain aspects of knowledge which are simply not available to humanity except through initiation. Later, perhaps, they will be, when humanity has advanced much farther. And then what is a secret of initiation today may be common knowledge tomorrow. It was known in the early days, of course, that the planets did revolve around the sun, but this was not common knowledge. This was the knowledge of the initiates. So when we're talking about the meaning of cycles and the spiritual activity which is achieved during the cycles, it also helps to know the physical correlates of the cycles. So we wish to know the physical correlates of these spiritually significant cycles. Now, that's easier when it comes to astrological cycles. When it comes to ray cycles, we're dealing with something more subtle, and there may be no strictly physical correspondences, in which case we certainly have to know, either as a secret of initiation or because it has been conferred by a master, by one who knows, what those time periods actually are. Maybe we will find some sort of detectable change or action on the inner planes which will correlate with those cycles, but it's not going to be anything exactly like the rotation of a heavenly body on its axis or the revolution around a center. Although there are great cycles which may have ray aspects to them which can be measured in that way. I wonder whether the complete gyration of the Earth's axis through all 12 signs or constellations over a approximately 25,000 year period, maybe more, almost like 26,000 as it's presently measured, whether such a gyration is also correlated with a particular ray. Here is the analogy. Because the smaller precessional age of, let us say, 2160 years is accompanied by a ray which is powerful during that time. For instance, the age of Pisces was accompanied by the powerful presence of the sixth ray correlated to the age of Pisces. And the age of Aquarius, another 2160 years, or maybe if we add overlap periods and so forth, we'll get closer to 2500 years. Maybe we will that particular period will have the seventh ray correlated with it. Now, the sixth and the seventh ray are in sequence, so it doesn't necessarily mean that because they are now, they always will be in sequence. The way of matching a ray with a sign which rules a precessional age is probably done on the basis of some secret knowledge, a secret kind of cycle. Because there have been many Aquarian ages, but only some of them have had the correlation of the seventh ray with them. Others have had the correlation of a different ray. But what I was getting to is this. What if we have a 25,000-year period, which is impending, ruled by the sign Aquarius? All 25,000 years ruled by Aquarius. Will there also be, in a higher sense, a ray correlation along with that 25,000-year period? DK does not say there will be, but we might infer that there could be. And In that case, what do we suppose has been the correlation of the 25,000 plus year period when Pisces was active? Was it the sixth ray? Or another ray? And from what level do those rays appear? That is our, that's one of our speculative, one of our questions which could encourage speculation. Anyway, some people say, well, look, I'm a human being, I can find it out for myself. In some respects, that is true. But there are some things we do communicate to our children, let us say, which they are not in a position to find out for themselves, but which is the inheritance of long ages of civilization, the learning during those ages, and which are communicated to them in all simplicity so they can grasp, assimilate, and take advantage of the information communicated. And thus it is with the secrets of initiation. Yes, we could probably work our way toward those secrets, and over many, 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 many years, we could tentatively come into possession of those secrets. But sometimes they simply have to be conferred, and then we can be sure of their accuracy. The interesting thing is, apparently, the secrets of atomic energy were not conferred. But the demanding minds of those in the fifth ray ashram somehow worked it out themselves. And this did come as a surprise to the members of the hierarchy, we are told. So that was a premature penetration, perhaps, but hierarchy is not in a position to stop such a penetration and has to respond when the truth is asserted. Of course, they have lots of adjustment and balancing to do as a result of that penetration, and one huge adjustment was between the years of 1950 and the year 2000 to withdraw the energy of the fifth ray ashram per se, as it was perhaps becoming too intelligent too rapidly for the slow pace of other ashrams, for instance, in the religious area or in the political area. And those areas can determine how the secrets that the fifth ray reveals will be used. Modern astrologers do not give the correspondences of the days and the planets and colors correctly. Well, we're back where we were before. According to HPB in her collected a series of writings, we have Sunday to the sun, and we have the color orange, as I recall. We have Monday to the moon and the color violet, and I might as well add it, the note B. This, by the way, is the note note D. As I'm recalling from the reading of Blavatsky, we have a Tuesday, which in French is Mardi or Mars Day, Mardi, corresponding to Mars and the color red. And according to HPB, the note C, the red note, but also associated with the first ray, you know, whether it should be associated with the sixth ray or the first ray remains to be seen. By the way, probably in terms of this orange and the note D, we would have to bring in the Vulcan, which is veiled by the sun, and for here we would have to when we come to talk about Monday, it would be wise to note D. My D is for disciple, but it's just plain old D. Monday, moon, and the note is violet, but we should say this. Bring in Uranus, which is veiled by the moon. So it's a Uranian day, I believe, and Uranus is correlated with the color violet, and HBB correlates the moon with the color violet. And even decay here in this collection on the creative hierarchies, there we have planet moon color violet, you see. And of course, since it's Aquarius, it's very likely that Uranus will be the veiled esoteric ruler, or the veiled ruler. When it comes to Wednesday, we have, it's also called Mère Crédit. The French is closer, isn't it? We have Mercury, of course. And the note, the color there is yellow. And the note is E, do re mi, and also connected with the Buddhi plane. I was explaining some of these things before, but when you we're dealing with so many correspondences, some repetition is of value, and always repetition in a different context can give a different angle of understanding. The Tibetan is always changing his angles of understanding, and therefore the position of the items he considers, their relative influence changes with his angle of understanding. Then we have Thursday, which is Thor's day. And interesting about Thor, because he generally has that hammer aspect connected to him. But we can say that this is certainly Jupiter, and its color is blue, and its note is G. Remember that Jupiter was not only the benevolence of the second ray. As a matter of fact, in decay, we understand Jupiter's influence as benevolent love, wisdom, and inclusiveness, and loving understanding, and so forth. But when you're looking at Jupiter in relation to Mount Olympus and the pantheon of the Greek gods, Zeus, Jupiter, Roman, Zeus, Greek, we understand that he threw a lot of thunderbolts and could be quite destructive in a first-ray sense. And that leads us to the question of what really is the monadic ray of Jupiter. Maybe it's seven, but maybe that seven has to turn into a one. We don't know that for sure. That is in the realm of speculation again. Well, when we come to Friday, I guess there's a Norse god there, isn't there? Is it Freya or Freya, something of that nature? But anyway, it's easier for us in French, Vendredi. And so, obviously, it's Venus, and the color is indigo. The note is A. There's much to discuss in the concerning the notes, and whether they begin a scale or not. Oftentimes, conventionally, we begin our scale, the most familiar scale in the Western world, with C major. It's let's say the C. Do re mi fa sol la di do. We do it that way. But it's also possible to begin with an A. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. Do re mi fa sol la ti do. I did it in the natural minor. I sang a minor scale, and that is so often the case. But you get different effects, different relationships of the notes to different rays if you begin, let us say, with a C or with an A. And it might be interesting to consider A as the beginning, in a sense, then go to E by a circle of fifths, then go to B, then go to F sharp, go to C sharp, go to G sharp, go to D sharp, go to A sharp, and then to F and C, G, D, A, and we're back. we're back on the circle of fifths. It would be interesting to see what is the result. It's very interesting that we measure our frequency in tuning in an orchestra according to an arbitrary A, but it is an A that we measure to. And so basically what we're doing is ensuring that the reference note A has the same frequency in all the different instruments. This is a question of accuracy in the fifth ray, is it not? By the way, remember that indigo is the esoteric color of the fifth ray. When it comes to Saturday, of course, it is Saturn, and the color is green, and the note is F, Fa, the note of the previous solar system, and then I think we have one more here. When it comes to, did I begin with Sunday? Did I go through them all? Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Okay, we did. And so we do have C, D, E, F, G, A, B. And I didn't put, the note is B. Yeah, we have them all here. As far as I remember, is how HPB looked at this, and then obviously we would add the rays, wouldn't we? Adding rays. I just saw an article, and I think it had some value in it, but they basically started numbering the rays in the order of the spectrum. So, first ray, red was the first ray, which is good enough, but orange became the second ray, and yellow became the third ray. You can make a stretch there. Green became the fourth ray, not a problem. Blue became the fifth ray, a big problem, unless we look at it in terms of indigo blue and an esoteric color. Indigo became the sixth ray. You'd have to stretch that pretty far, go into the monadic ray of Venus to find blue, to find that indigo on the sixth ray. And violet became the seventh ray. The orange of the second ray is really out of place. And the yellow of the third ray has some quite high spiritual connections and some connection to mentality. That's okay. The blue of the fifth ray, you have to know correspondences to arrive at that. And the indigo of the sixth ray, no, except by a very remote correlation with the sixth ray monad of Venus, since Venus is connected with indigo, but I don't think that the author had that in mind. So adding the rays, we find Sunday, ray 1, Monday, ray 7, Tuesday, ray 6, Wednesday, ray 4, Thursday, ray 2, and Friday, interestingly enough, ray 5. But it sometimes says Friday's child is loving and giving, Saturday's child works hard for a living. I'll try to find that. Okay, Saturday, the Sabbath, in a way, ray 3 for Saturday and Saturn. But let's look at that, because maybe we can find that as Saturn. No. Sorry. No, that's not what we want. Saturday's child. Saturday Night Live, but we don't want that. Oh, modern society gives you a different perspective here. Saturday's child works hard for a living. So maybe they'll give that. Monday's child is one of the fortune-telling songs popular in a nursery. So let's look at whether we have that in the Wikipedia. Monday's child is fair of face. Let's put this in and see if we can correlate this with the ha, ha, ha. It's an old one. It's an old one with old meanings. But let's look at this, just for fun. It's fair of face, and you might almost say that the moon face is there. And the paleness of the moon, pale moon face, certainly not Uranus, pale moon face. Tuesday's child is full of grace, does not correlate. That's Mars. Wednesday's child is full of woe. This is Mercury, the star of conflict. No, stage of consciousness. Star of conflict. That works. The fret and worry of the fourth ray. Thursday's child has far to go. I would say does not correlate, except Jupiter, Sagittarius, and the long journeys which are undertaken, long journeys on the quest. So, in a way, Friday's child is loving and giving, so this correlates with Venus, but from its second ray aspect. And Friday's child is loving and giving. Saturday's child works hard for living, so Saturn, the planet of work. But a child who is born on the Sabbath day, you know, has kind of a religious overtone, is bonny and blithe and good and gay. And, you know, these are the old meanings of the words. And all we can think of, perhaps the sun in relation to Leo, will give us a bonny and blithe and good and cheerful and sunny and radiant, you know, all that. So I would say that it doesn't work out exactly, but there are some correlations which are irresistible, I would say. All right, moving on, right on. There is white and black astrology. The good or bad results obtained do not depend upon the principles, which are the same in both kinds, but upon the astrologer himself. So as always, you know, what is the motive? Does the astrologer respond to the higher or lower influences of the planet, or to higher rulerships? Most of which, you know, when you're dealing with astrological magic, were not even known, except maybe by initiates. I mean, if you were going to undertake an Aries ceremony in the past, it would have been under Mars, wouldn't it? Now, just imagine undertaking that under Mercury and somehow invoking a down flood of ideas from the birthplace of ideas. In that way, Aries, the birthplace of ideas, corresponds with Mercury, which is a highly mental planet, fully able to access ideas from the cosmic ethers, which I think, in a way, it partially rules. That Mercury partially rules those cosmic ethers. So, in the old days, the church used to persecute people. They used to find evidences of astrological rituals, and people would undertake certain rituals at certain times, you know, just imagine in the dead of night, as it were, in order to invoke certain demons to do their will and so forth. But there can be, you know, the black astrology, black in this sense, black astrology is the astrology of form. And the white astrology is the astrology of the soul and spirit. So people seeking the compliance of the elements to their low desires are practicing black astrology. Like HBB said, I mean, until we take the fourth degree, we are to a great extent unconscious black magicians, or at least gray magicians, because we still have an identification with the personality which we still seek to satisfy. And as long as we are in any way seeking to satisfy the instrument in our nature, the personality, rather than the real identity, we're involved to a degree in the astrology of form, which can lead off into the left-hand path where we seek the cooperation of the heavenly bodies to fulfill our desires and gratify the instincts of the form. So anyway, who is practicing? That's the thing. It's the same with magic, isn't it? It's even the same with psychology. Lately in the movies, we've seen some pretty unpleasant individuals who are very psychologically astute. You know, in that whole Hannibal Lecter thing in The Silence of the Lambs, he's some demented psychiatrist who is extremely intelligent, but very evil. So it's not the knowledge itself that determines the morality. It's the use of the knowledge by the person who is wielding the knowledge. Even a white magician can know the principles of black magic and turn to good account those principles. One must know the methods of one's enemies in order to prevail, to be successful. It says something here, note Secret Doctrine 1, Section 16, and Secret Doctrine 3, Section 38, deal with the Zodiac, with biblical references to the Zodiac, and with astrology and the mysteries of initiation. So, can we actually, how many great books can one read and assimilate and correlate and apply? Those of us who work with the Alice Bailey books, but who respect the teachings of Theosophy and the works of HPB, have had the 24 books of Alice Bailey and DK to assimilate as best we could, and we've had to work also with the Secret Doctrine and maybe Isis Unveiled. And if we throw the books of Agni Yoga into the picture, it's a very big job. Now, what will happen when the Tibetan comes out with his third installment in 2025 and after? Well, of course, these will be given over time, you know, one book at a time, probably, if that's how they're going to appear as books. And then the assimilation process will be very great indeed. The Agni Yoga series, the HPB work in the 19th century, the Alice Bailey work in the 20th century, and then the new dispensation. But hopefully we will have the method and the manus whereby that can be accomplished. We cannot be a scholar of all things, although when you look at what the Tibetan knows and how he fed that information to HPB, you realize that it is possible to know much more than we know. And one can only imagine what it is that the planetary logos knows, but then to carry it further and further. And we realize that omniscience is a possibility, but not under limited circumstances. Cosmic omniscience is the ultimate, and as I am fond of saying, it is infinitely far removed from the absolute being of the absolute. Here we have the constellations, further secret doctrine references. Each of the 12 constellations, whether separately or in combination with other signs, has an occult influence either for good or evil. Now, what do we mean by in combination with other signs? And notice how signs and constellations are used interchangeably. We've already discussed quite a bit about that, constellations as galaxies of stars, and signs as concentrated influences. I've talked about the meaning of those Devic concentrations attuned to the energies of the constellations. And what are in combinations with other signs, or constellations in combination with other constellations? And we have many of them discussed in esoteric astrology. Many are discussed, such as the many many triangles, and also quadruplicities, such as if I gave us the quadruplicity of Aries, Leo, Libra, Aquarius, what would we think? There's a quadruplicity. Aries, Leo, Libra, Aquarius, they're all united. I could even throw in Uranus. I could throw in, not Uranus, but I could throw in Scorpio, because they're all ruled by Uranus in one way or another. The hierarchical ruler of Aries is Uranus. The veiled hierarchical ruler of Leo is Uranus. The esoteric ruler of Libra is Uranus. The exalted ruler, can I call it a ruler? The exalted planet in Scorpio is Uranus. And the orthodox ruler of Aquarius is Uranus. There are five associated constellations which can have a very Uranian effect. And in a way, beginning with Uranus, we could trace the energies which pass through it back to those constellations as well, because Uranus will be a conduit in one way or another for those constellations. The new in Aries, the authentic in Leo, the reversal of the wheel in Libra and Scorpio both, and the idea of the new and better way, the renovation in Aquarius. And all of those are part of Uranus. So what is this influence for evil? Well, evil can arise when a inappropriate form grasps the energy for its own desires, or when the energy simply cannot be assimilated and is the source of disruption. Now, how about a spelling? Disruption or overstimulation. An energy can be good. You know, the Kundalini energy will bring liberation, but what if it is suddenly passing through a clogged and unclean physical vehicle? It will wreak havoc, right? And this we could call evil, or at least the disorganization of form requiring much more use of time to regain the lost status. Okay. Never know what I'm going to encounter next here. Enoch, the type of the dual nature of man, spiritual and physical, I guess spirit matter, occupies the center of the astronomical cross, which is a six-pointed star. Well, a six-pointed star, you know, it's possible if you take the 12 signs of the zodiac, and you, how would we do that? Every, starting at Aries, we would go Aries, Gemini, Leo, Libra, Sagittarius, Aquarius. And I guess we would find a way to make interpenetrating triangles. Of course, the interesting thing is that the two of the points of those triangles, let's see, from Gemini to Leo, which is, no, that's not far enough. That might not work out as I thought it would. I do think we can make a six-pointed star if we deal with water and earth signs. Let's just say that the downward-pointing triangle will anchor itself at the Cancer point, and will include Scorpio and Pisces. The upward-pointing triangle will anchor itself at the Capricorn point, and will include Taurus and Virgo. Yes, we can do that. And we can make a six-pointed star also involving the fire and air signs. The bottom point will not be at the midheaven and the IC. It will be, yes, it will be somewhere. It will be somewhere else. It will be more like perhaps in Gemini. We can do it in various ways. We can, because it will be two equilateral triangles, and we can consider any one of those the bottom or the top point as we wish. But conventionally, in looking at the normal horoscope, when dealing with water and earth signs, the downward pointing triangle will anchor at the fourth house at zero, Cancer, conventionally, and the upward pointing triangle will attach itself to the upward, the highest point, which is the Capricorn point. But what DK has a different kind of a triangle here in mind. The upper triangle, in the upper angle of the upper triangle, is the eagle. He's placing Scorpio, the eagle, there. I mean, I think we're looking at the four fixed signs. The lion will be in the lower left, so we can immediately see that we're not looking at the conventional horoscope, and the bull in the right, the bull, Taurus. And these are not necessarily separated by, let's see, if we were to go in a counterclockwise manner, we could get, we have a long opposition and two equal sides is what we have. So far it's kind of like some kind of isosceles triangle with the short point, perhaps at the Leo leg. But then he places Enoch as the prototype of Aquarius, the man, and he places that figure in the center. These are the four animals of Ezekiel and, well, it says Revelations, but it really should be Revelation. It's the book of Revelation. It is a singular. So there's several things going on in this particular paragraph. And interestingly, Aquarius is associated with both highs and lows, with both spirit and matter. So Enoch represents the dual nature of man in the center of the fixed cross triangle. And this is the cross of the soul, really, which is being represented in a triangular manner. It's some sort of occult presentation. It doesn't actually work out as any kind of equilateral triangle. Matter of fact, the way it seems to be set up, if we're looking at the horoscope in the conventional way, we have quite a... It doesn't work out. Scorpio at the top, going in the counterclockwise wheel, and we'd have Taurus at in the right. So we have turned the wheel definitely. This is not meant to be an astrological representation. It's meant for us to bring these four signs into a certain relationship which tells about their relative importance. Scorpio, the great sign of transformation, the eagle flies high, the lion in the lower left, and the bull of illumination in the right. So we have a kind of transcendence or triumph in the eagle. In the lion, we may have the lion of self-assertion, or we can have the lion with the blazing light of the soul and the bull of illumination, but we have the man who takes advantage of them all. And from another point of view, if we look at the lower aspects of these animals, we will look at the man who is Enoch, who can tame the lion, ride the bull, and somehow soar like the eagle. These are the four fixed signs found in the vision of Ezekiel, who I think must have been a great astronomer. Rather interesting that his name is associated with a certain temple which is equivalent to the monadic body, the temple of Ezekiel. And then in the book of Revelation, I've read parts of it here, and I've seen that these figures are represented there. It's really a Kabbalistic book. Interesting about that book, we are told that although it was written by John, so to speak, that Master Hilarion was the real author, the former Saint Paul, I suppose, dictated that book. So this is the fixed cross of the heavens. There's obviously more that can be said about this, but I'd have to learn more in order to say it. So I won't belabor the point excessively. It would take some research in the secret doctrine. Because it's rather interesting that a six-pointed star is the center of an astronomical cross. And he really doesn't give us what the other points of this six-pointed star would have to be. We're not told, and it doesn't seem to work out symmetrically, because in order to have symmetry and the true equilateral triangle, we have to have signs that are all in the same element. When we're dealing with the crosses, the best we can do is to have an isosceles triangle with one right angle and two 45-degree angles. And I wonder if there's some sort of, the way it's set up, I can't see any interpenetration there to make a six-pointed star, at least not any kind of symmetrical one. Okay. One just realizes in the new schools how much research has to be done and how much can come to light with the proper patience and the proper scholarship. We're sitting on a mine of illumination, to mix my metaphors. It's a gold mine, but gold is really light in a way. We are just beneath the surface. Is this tremendous effulgence of light, which can, in a way, explain all things in our planetary ring past knot and beyond. And it's only our addiction to desire for the phenomenal world, as the Tibetan, as the Buddha would put it, which is blocking out the light. It's a bit like the relationship of Mars and Venus, or Mars and Mercury. Mars is that desirous connection with the dense world, which in a way it rules. And either Venus or Mercury or both are related to the light that can be released when desire turns into aspiration, into intelligent activity, and then into illumination. So we have a humanity which is not very illumined yet. I suppose there have been periods of illumination, but never where the entirety of humanity was in an illumined condition. We can look back and we can say, oh, the Lemurians, oh, the Atlanteans, but it just wasn't so. There were certain elites within those civilizations who were carrying the light. And now we have the opportunity to bring all of humanity into a greater condition of eventual illumination. Okay, the constellations of the Great Bear and of the Pleiades constitutes the greatest mystery of an occult nature. Well, we should not doubt that, as DK has spent so much time talking about the interplay of the seven rishis and their seven wives, so to speak. The star Alcor seems to be related to the Pleiades because it's one of the wives of the great rishis who was transposed to be near him, I think, because of her faithfulness. That rishi would be Mizar, at least in the terminology we normally use, and Alcor is the visual double. So only one of them had the either the privilege or the good fortune of having his wife near him. And you then wonder, what about the other seven? So DK has talked to us about the one-to-one correspondences of the stars in the Great Bear and the major stars of the Pleiades, the Seven Sisters, with which we are familiar, and how it is that a great quaternary is formed by the Great Bear, the Pleiades, Sirius, we'll just leave it to that, we'll just call it Sirius, even though Sirius can mean a lot of different things, and our solar system. Well, I think as much as he can have done it, Master DK has expanded on this to reveal some of the sort of first-ray, third-ray mysteries. The willpower and prototypical power is given to the, let's say, seven sacred planets by the Great Bear, but Manus is communicated to the planetary lords of our solar system by the stars of the Pleiades. It's as almost as if the seven rays are involved here, but from the will aspect of the Great Bear and from the intelligence aspect, with the source being the Pleiades, and something involving Sirius, I suppose, either our system or the Little Bear, as for which Sirius may be a blind, communicate more the love aspect. So you see how years ago, I don't know how she would know this, maybe she just would, but Master DK probably made this statement. It sounds like him to do it, and then this is a seed of a huge expansion of knowledge and information given in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire and in Esoteric Astrology. I've sometimes thought, you know, I'll just go back to it to say that if the Great Bear are the represent the seven head centers in the one about whom naught may be said, and as I've said, these are either, so to speak, in the head or above the head when it comes to a human being who has a visible or tangible head. The Pleiades can represent several things, but I've just wondered, when they're called the jewel box, if they don't represent some seven-faceted jewel in the heart of the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, since the Pleiades are a cluster. And in fact, around the Pleiades, a number of constellations, or at least stars, are thought to revolve. Of course, all of that would have to be proven, wouldn't it? I mean, it's a nice theory. But we're given the 250,000 years revolutionary period of our sun, and presumably of accompanying stars, if this really happens. Because otherwise all of these stars would quickly be out of relation if the sun was the only revolving unit, and we have nothing in astronomical history or the history of mythology to suggest that the sun has somehow left the association of Sirius or of other neighboring stars. Nothing of that nature at all. So, all right, we go with this, the greatest mystery of an occult nature. from the beginning of humanity, the cross, or man, if man stands in one way, with his legs together, he is a cross, with arms outstretched, stretched out horizontally, and someone's putting in here the fixed cross, maybe it's AAB, typifying his cosmic origin, was connected with his psychic nature and with the struggles which led to initiations. So from the beginning of humanity, the cross or man with arms stretched out horizontally, typifying his cosmic origin, I suppose coming out of a great pre-cosmic equilibrium, I suppose, emerging from a great pre-cosmic equilibrium, was connected with his psychic nature. The cross was connected with his psychic nature and with the struggles which led to initiation. Well, if AAB inserted that parenthetical phrase, the fixed cross, it sounds very correct, because the fixed cross is the cross of the soul, and with so much fourth ray through Taurus and Scorpio, the cross of struggle. Indeed, and the cross on which initiation is taken. Three initiations and close preparation for the fourth, which we learn is not taken on the fixed cross, though the abiding influence of the soul can be found even after the fixed cross, but the soul will then be the triad, the true ego, as we are told. It's all a question of consciousness. Consciousness is limited within the soul body and less limited within the triadal vehicles. So, let's say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 150B. Page, oh, are we making progress here? Goodness. Page 639, maybe not so much progress. But each one of these is kind of a given seed thought of Esoteric Astrology 150C, page 639, a kind of a seed thought. And we're expanding upon these things and sending out, what can I call it, you know, like rays, tendrils of association, thoughts which may link up with other bits of knowledge out there and suddenly constellate into an intuitive revelation, others which may go nowhere, like the parable in the Bible where the sower is casting a seed and some of it falls upon the hard ground and maybe some of it in the water. I don't think that was used exactly, but the idea is falling upon unsuitable soil or no soil at all, and some of it falls or into the rich and ready soil and brings forth the plant and good fruit. I mean, the soil has a lot to do with who we are, as the knowledge of the ageless wisdom is cast forth for us to grasp and grow, or for our own non-response. And then again, maybe are the birds involved in picking up some of that, of those seeds, and doing, making it impossible for the germination to occur? All the analogies apply. We want to be the rich, ready soil in which the seeds of the ageless wisdom can germinate. Okay, I'll be right back.